This is It Cinema Squabble. This can't be edition 12.
It is.
What?
12.
My God, we're getting old.
I know, right?
Boy, it must be the paint fumes that I was smelling earlier. I have a hard time. It says episode 12 right here on my sheet, but I have a hard time believing this.
So young.
Oh, my gosh.
Exactly. Well, you know, we do have some elderly people here.
We do. But what is this? Cinema Squabble. We are a number of Seattle's film critics. We gather in theater several times a week. We kind of discuss kibitz. We shmai about the various different films that are out. And we bring it to you now in podcast form. That's what we're doing here.
Did you really say shmai?
You're wondering what that means.
I am, actually.
A little bit of Yiddish for you, my friend.
Okay.
Yeah. So my name is Adam Gerke. Joining me in the studio right now, we've got Brian Zitzelman.
Hello.
Coming to us on a microphone that's actually right next to me, as a matter of fact. Brian, you come to us from The Examiner, yes?
That's me. Oh. I'm Examiner, Zitzel Film, variety of places.
And Sarah Michelle Fetters, you from Seattle Gay News, also moviefreak.com.
That is correct.
And joining us also in studio this very moment, two very important people, Mr. Carl Spence and Beth Barrett, who come to us from the Seattle International Film Festival. And why don't you guys give us, for folks who aren't aware, your titles.
Well, Carl was just here. Come on.
We're still standing, but I'm the artistic director.
Okay.
and I'm the director of programming.
So we have...
Which means we choose the movies together.
So they're all
very
the more reason...
Very powerful.
Yes, all the more reason to have them here right now and discussing what just happened as far as Seattle International Film Festival and all thoughts in between.
So Adam, that means the 400-plus programs that were just here for those 25 days, we can blame them.
Mm.
Yep.
Every one of them.
Every one of them.
I didn't like this one movie.
There was this one. It made me think too hard.
There were subtitles.
That does become an issue for some people.
I can distill it in 25 days and 25 seconds. We'll make it easy for the audience.
Okay, there we go. I like it.
Okay. Well, before we dig into all of that, let's talk a little bit about some of the films that are out. In fact, why don't we just start with what was the opening night of SIFF, which was Spy.
Yeah, Spy comes from Paul Feig, best known for Freaks and Geeks on TV and on film for Bridesmaids and The Heat. His last two are important because they are the good Melissa McCarthy movies. Like Adam McKay with Will Ferrell, McCarthy films tend to be worthwhile only when working with Feig. Spy is no exception. A comedy set in the spy genre that has McCarthy's Susan Cooper in the field after all of the CIA's top agents get their cover blown. Having worked behind the desk for years, Susan has to wield a gun, get into fistcuffs for the first time since her initial training with the CIA. She goes on the hunt. Susan gets a series of embarrassing secret identities, accused of loving cats, verbally spars with an agent that's gone rogue, played by Jason Statham, and tries to take down a snooty baddie, played with utter contempt by Rose Byrne. Now, Carl, I found Spy to be terrific, consistently funny with golden one-liners, well-orchestrated physical comedy. Did you find this funny, or are you more reminiscent of the sad Bulgarian clown that Byrne's character repeatedly references?
I would not be someone who found it not funny. I found it very funny, and Paul Feig is very funny in person, very witty, and he did correct me in terms of Bobby Cannavale and Rose, because they're actually not married. I said they were married in front of 3,000 people.
That's what I thought. They were married on our show.
I did too. So I said it twice.
Wow.
But more people probably saw it here on your show than in the theater. But it was a great film, very witty. It's one of my favorite films, and it's a spy. It's not a spy spoof. It's a spy film that's a comedy.
Exactly.
So I think that's different. You could compare it to OSS 117, but I think that's more of a spoof. The French one, that's in the French language, mm-hmm. so you'd have to read subtitles. But Spy for Americans is great.
And Sarah, why do you think a lot of people are just calling it a straight-up spoof and then kind of having issues with that?
Because it's Melissa McCarthy. I mean, that is the only reason I can think that they call it a spoof is because they assumed because Melissa McCarthy's in it, it has to be just, it can't be taken seriously, which...
But it has Jason Statham. I mean...
Who's hysterical.
But he plays a straight man.
Sure.
Yeah, it's no stretch for Statham to be doing what he's doing.
No.
No.
He's getting laughs, but he's not, you know, that's the point, but he's not actually trying to be funny.
Oh, exactly. He's doing his, you know, his Guy Ritchie stuff when he did Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch. Mm-hmm. And he's hysterical, and in many times he does steal a ton of scenes.
Is it just men having issues with women in leading roles again? What's
probably
the problem?
I mean, it could be. But Melissa McCarthy, I don't think she's getting enough credit for just how fantastic she is in this movie. She got an Oscar nomination for Bridesmaids, an Oscar nomination she deserved. I would make a case that she is better here.
You stole my line. I was going to say she's better. I agree. She is definitely better in this movie. She's improved, and she is funny.
Now, the other important person in the film is her partner back in the office, whose name completely escapes me right now.
Susan Cooper.
We didn't even
put her name in our credit.
You mean Miranda Hart?
That's the one. Yes.
From Call the Midwife.
Yes.
The hit BBC television series.
I talked with a number of folks who all thought there just wasn't enough her in there because her bits also sort of as a straight person-ish, but still quirky, added a nice flavor too.
But I would say one of the issues I do have with Spy is length. It's one of those things where there's so much terrific stuff, and I think at a certain point Feig didn't know what to pull out, and so he leaves more in there than he kind of needed to. If you start throwing more Miranda Hart into this movie, you're going from 2 hours to 2 hours and 10 minutes to an untenable length.
It is two hours, but it was very quick. It was a quick 2 hours. It felt like it was 90 minutes, maybe even 89.
See, and I, on the other hand, did find the length a little challenging.
I don't know. All the stuff... I mean, Rose Byrne's introduced to get a pretty good amount in the back half, especially.
And
She just kills it. I mean, what better line than referring to someone as having an abortion of a dress? What a wonderful put down.
And then Jason Statham at the end, where he rides off, he thinks he thinks he's going to go down the river somewhere, and they're like, I don't think he knows it's a little.
Well, the face off machine has to be the best.
The face off machine is hysterical. Just give me 50 cents. Let's go to the face off machine. Or pulling, you know, I lost my arm and I had to put it back on with my other arm or whatever that was.
Yeah.
I saw it twice. So I saw it 3,000 people. It was pretty crazy hearing 3,000 people laugh at once.
And it held up.
Yes. So did you see it with an audience or just...
I saw it with a press screening.
That's not an audience.
No, and I will say, because I have two friends that are Melissa McCarthy nuts. And so I went to see it again with them. And so I saw it with a big, huge promo audience. I enjoyed it a heck of a lot more the second time around, I have to say.
Seeing Kurt Cobain montage of heck with people who knew him versus fans.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
Not sure
two completely different takes. So
but it works. It's a good reference, I think. That actually works quite well.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Theater, rent, skip, Sarah, where do you sit?
Theater.
Okay, and Carl?
Theater, of course.
Of course, right. And Beth, how about you? Where do you come out?
Oh, theater, absolutely.
Brian, how about you?
100% theater.
All right, and we're all rounding out theater. So that's five solid theaters on Spy. How did that happen? That's we need the contrarian to speak up here somehow.
Hey, we do theater and home.
Like, I know.
You know, I would do both. I'm going to watch it at home when it comes out later, too.
Oh, okay. So that works as well. Also brings us to another film that screened at SIFF, and we had the composer in town for Atticus Ross, composer on Love and Mercy, which is the Brian Wilson story. Brian Wilson played by two characters, and this is set in back in the 60s and also kind of in the 80s, 80s, 90s, played by Paul Dano. And also played by John Cusack, who plays the older Brian Wilson. And what we see is this sort of flash-forward flashback of Wilson's life as he kind of descended into madness and drug use and then abusive drug use done by his psychologist, played by Paul Giamatti. And then a lovely woman played by Elizabeth Banks, who basically rescues him from the clutches of Paul Giamatti's character, Dr. Eugene Landy. I knew this.
The interesting about that, Brian Wilson, is that he still thinks that he's a nice guy. He's sort of...
Brian is one of those... So what we have here is we get this flash forward flashback, and it's the life story of Brian, and we kind of get a real picture of how he became the person he is now. And incidentally, by the way, Brian Wilson on tour right now, along with another SIFF favorite, Rodriguez, of Searching for Sugar Man.
Exactly.
Which, now, if we ever had a case for drugs are bad... That would be it.
Yes.
On both instances here, having met both of these individuals, I can certainly say, wow.
But how is the movie?
I think I'm a little more down. I like the movie. I know some people have kind of really, really loved it. I think it's solid. I think for a biopic, you run into a lot of problems of trying to cram too much life into one film. I think this movie does a nice job of finding the two different elements of his life and not going too much into how he was as a kid and all the treatment of his dad. You get the sense of what all that is. I think the elements with Dano as the younger Brian Wilson putting together Pet Sounds, kind of growing the Beach Boys feel, is really good. And obviously some of that helps the fact that Pet Sounds is a spectacular album. Stuff with Cusack, I don't think is well-rounded enough. It's fine, but whenever it skips to that portion of the movie, I think it does lose a little bit, enough to keep it from being this great movie I know some people think it is.
Mm-hmm. What I found most interesting, because I was watching this film specifically because I was going to be talking with Atticus Ross about this, specifically watching and listening for the score. I think what makes this film specifically unique is the fact that you've got this score that's been composed based on all of Brian Wilson's original music and reels that he was putting together back in the 60s and also moving in towards Pet Sounds and then also his work with Smile. And so Atticus has managed to stitch all of this stuff together to make a unique score, which, let me just say, Brian Wilson, to begin with, is doing high-level math. He is doing some insane composition work when he was writing for the Beach Boys, and people never really gave him credit for that. So for Ross to go in and deconstruct and reconstruct all of this stuff, it's like taking trigonometry, rewriting the equation, and spitting it back out. And that, to me, was fantastic. And I thought that was worth the price of admission.
I know the two of you have seen it. I mean, where were you guys on it? Were you in the big fan, casual fan?
Loved it, but honestly, you know, this is not a qualifier, but maybe it's a qualifier. But actually, because of this, I actually got to meet Terrence Malick. So I loved it even more.
Okay. All right.
But
as a non-Malick visitor.
Paul Dano's amazing. I actually like John Cusack. And I thought Bill Paolo did a great job in terms of the juxtaposition. And Elizabeth Banks, I thought, actually, I really liked her character. So for me, it actually gave me a completely new appreciation for who Brian Wilson was, what he did, because I always thought Beach Boys is something, but it took me to a different level as far as understanding who he was and his brilliance that I didn't otherwise appreciate before.
How about you, Beth?
Yeah, and I think, Adam, you hit on something really important, is that the soundtrack really let you into his mind in a way and made it more intimate and made all of these performances just a little bit more intimate. And Elizabeth Banks, mm-hmm. spectacular, spectacular job.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
She's got Oscar buzz swirling her.
I guess the problem I have with Elizabeth Banks is maybe a strange one. She has done so many comedies like 30 Rock and Wet Hot American Summer, where she does the faux serious performance and it's meant to be funny. Sometimes for me, when I'm watching her do the actual serious dramatic performance,
she's too funny.
It's not that she's too funny. I just think of her doing it as an act, her talking about how overdramatic it is.
You need to disconnect that wire.
It can be a little I don't think she's that good of an actress.
Oh, I disagree. I completely disagree with that.
Where are the good dramatic performances by Banks other than this? Where are we talking?
There's a Chris Pine movie from SIFF a couple of years ago where she was fantastic in it.
That movie was not fantastic.
The movie was not fantastic. She was fantastic in it.
She was fine in that movie. I'll say this. I like Paul Dano in this, and I usually am not Dano guy. I think his performances tend to be a little, maybe not, one note's probably the wrong word, but so wiry, so specific on the particular emotion. If he's a bad guy, he's like, you know, evil. If he's insane, he's the most insane guy ever. This one, even though it could very easily go into, I don't know, stereotypes and like broad elements of a person kind of losing it, you feel the humanity.
It's super nuanced.
Yeah, it is.
It really gets into those little tiny parts of it.
Carl, you said you're not a Dano person.
I am not, but it was his best performance ever. It actually made me think, actually, he's a good actor.
No, it was great.
I think he was actually great.
So you guys are saying I kind of need to see this one, and I was silly for skipping it during the festival.
Well, but it is in theater, so you can't still see it.
I know, that's true.
And what I will also point out is I'm not entirely sure that Cusack is an actual good representation of the person who Brian Wilson is. If you've seen Brian Wilson in person, he's usually shepherded around by an escort. Somebody kind of holds him by the arm and walks him from place to place. And it's kind of like if you see him in concert, it's kind of like going to Showbiz Pizza Place or Chuck E. Cheese, where you would see the animatronic robots on stage, and before somebody would put in a quarter, they're all just kind of there inanimate. And then somebody drops in a quarter, and then zing, they spring to life. And Brian's kind of the same way. When he kind of gives you the lead into the music, it's like, this next song, the voices are supposed to be angelic and high, and the tambourine is supposed to play on this special, you know. And then he drops his hand, and that's the cue for the band to start. And then they play it perfectly. And then he sings his part, which is, you know, also amazing to hear. But he springs to life in that point, and then when the instant the song is over, he just kind of descends back into that quiet little place where he came from. So we don't really see that with Cusack as much. We see elements of that. So
I mean, if it's from the late 80s, early 90s, was Wilson that way at that point? I don't think he was there at that point yet.
I saw him in 2005.
So you're still over a decade away from that.
Yeah. So
he's pretty, what's his age now?
He's in his late 60s.
Older, I was going to say, I think he's pretty much, he's up there with Paul McCartney at this point. He's like 75, 76.
All right, well.
Right?
So,
but I do agree, I did meet him, and it is true. It's sort of,
it's,
he's brilliant,
He's got the thousand-yard stare looking through you. It's kind of interesting. So, Love and Mercy, where do we sit? Sarah? You didn't see.
I'm going to see it. Before I do my Oscar predictions, I need to see it.
Okay. Well, let's start with you, Brian. How about you?
Really, really solid Rent.
Okay. One in the rental category. And Carl, how about you?
It's a big L for Love for me.
Okay, so one in the old theater. And Beth, how about you?
I got to go theater.
Okay.
Theater.
And I'm going to say theater as well. So that's three in the three theaters, one rental. And Sarah, you're going to have to check this one out as well. So
I will be doing that soon.
We'll keep you to task on that. Mm-hmm. That brings us to a spooky movie that we happen to see, you and I.
Yeah, we saw this last week.
Insidious 3.
Yeah, we can just go pretty fast on this one, I would think.
So
what happens, Adam?
We've got the psychic Elise, who is played by none other than...
the great Lin Shaye.
Mm-hmm. And so we're getting the prequel. We're getting an idea of...
Before the Lambert haunting.
Before the evil, where everything begins.
Before the further is called the further.
Right.
And if you don't know what the further is, you haven't seen Insidious.
And... for those of you who haven't seen Insidious, it almost doesn't even matter, really.
Nope.
So we're getting an idea of this horrific world known as the Further. We're getting an idea of where the dead come from when they come back to Earth and haunt us or attach onto us. And so we're following a young girl whose father is Dermot Mulroney, and she happens to be Stephanie Scott. Between the two of them, we've got this family dynamic, daughter, father, younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
Horror ensues.
Dead mother.
Dead mom.
It's a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, it's not. Sorry.
Sort of, but not really. So without giving any of the plot away, Sarah, how about you? Where do you sit on this?
I did not like the first two Insidious films.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like them at all. I think they're disjointed, unfocused, and have a horrible balance between the comedic and horror aspects.
Yeah.
I do not think it is director James Wan and writer Lee Whannell's finest hours.
Mm-hmm. That being said,
I liked this film.
Right.
Lee Whannell makes his directorial debut, so he still writes the script. It's still all him. He also steps behind the camera to direct this time because James Wan was off doing Furious 7.
Mm-hmm.
It works. It's silly.
But Wan also makes a cameo appearance.
Yes, he does. That's true.
Which is kind of fun.
It definitely plays on horror tropes. It doesn't do a lot that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it doesn't fall to prequel disease
right.
in that we know how everything has to turn out because it's directly connected to the films that follow it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not directly connected to the films that follow it. There are hints
mm-hmm.
to what is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But this is its own contained story
mm-hmm.
about a different family dealing with a different ghost.
Yeah.
And it's about Elise's coming back into her own self-empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun film. Is it like the greatest horror movie I'm ever going to watch? No.
Yeah.
Is it even is it the best horror movie I'm going to see this year? No.
Well, we don't know.
Oh, it's not. It's already not better than It Follows. It Follows is one of the best films of the year. Hello.
I don't know if I'll go with you on
Get
that.
Get with it.
All right. But it
does what it needs to do. It's
Sorry.
A lot of fun.
That being the case, Insidious 3, where do you sit on this?
It's a strong Rent.
Strong Rent.
I mean, if you're a fan of the series, you're going to want to see it in the theater. But for everybody else, it's a strong Rent.
And I'm with you on that Rent as well. I thought the jump scares were effective and kept me on my toes long enough. Once we get into the darkness, I kind of go, But still, you're right. Good Rent overall. Big film this week, though.
It's the biggest. They're thinking $125 million opening is what they're expecting.
Good
Hoping.
Lord.
I know, right?
So what are we talking about?
We're talking about Jurassic World.
Roar!
It's the return to Michael Crichton and Steven Spielberg's dinosaur playground. 22 years after the events of Isla Nublar, InGen has actually opened their park. They now call it Jurassic World. And it's been open for over a decade, but people are getting tired of the dinos.
And doesn't that happen? I mean,
it does. You get tired.
I mean, I get tired of roller coasters. Man, I've run Space Mountain. Space Mountain no longer holds that same allure to me.
So you got to do something bigger, badder, nastier. So of course, you know, what do scientists do in silly little sci-fi movies like this?
They make something bigger and more exciting.
Yes. So we get a genetically modified dinosaur called the Indominus Rex. And that's always a good idea.
Uh-huh.
Chaos ensues. 20,000 people are in jeopardy. Park manager Bryce Dallas Howard must team with raptor wrangler Chris Pratt to save her two nephews who are in the park by themselves. That's it. It's dinosaurs run amok once again in Costa Rica.
Zero character development.
I would completely disagree.
And once again, once again, here we are. Same movie, done this before. Hello. Right. It's Hangover Part 2, but with dinosaurs.
Right.
No, because this is actually a good movie, and Hangover Part 2 is horrible.
Admittedly, it's better than Hangover Part 2, but that's a very low, low bar. I mean,
Director Colin Trevorrow, who, again, another SIF alumni who was here a few years ago with Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yes.
Which is fantastic. Reteams with his writer from that film, Derek Connolly, to rewrite the script for this, and I think they do a fine job making a 1940s-style Universal monster movie. It's a blast, and it offers fantastic visuals, it's extremely well-directed, and it's got a stupendous final that works in spades.
I'm not going to disagree with you on any of those points, but I am going to disagree with you on character development. Zero!
Nope, completely disagree.
How about this? There's a whole subplot in there on divorce, which comes out of nowhere and doesn't even need to be there.
It does need to be there because it's how the two boys bond and reignite their sibling love for one another.
They'd already bonded before when he saw the big Mesosaurus come out. And he started smiling again. And they're like, we're friends.
Hey, man, let's go ride some rides.
Completely disagree. And Bryce Dallas's character actually goes through a transformation.
She just plays Katherine Heigl. She just plays that's stereotypical.
But see, you wanted that to be the case before you walked into the theater.
I don't like Bryce. I don't like Paul Dano at all, but I liked him a lot in Love and Mercy. So me not liking Bryce Dallas Howard is just, you know, continuing her performance of one-note characters.
And Carl wants to get words in here, too.
I'm talking, but you know, there is another Animal Kingdom movie this weekend.
There is.
What Roar.
Is
it? Oh, 1981.
Roar playing in town with the lions.
Roar.
Yes. Practical effects.
Whereas actual people being actually attack eaten. The actors, and including Melanie Griffith.
I guess my big problem with the movie, besides the boring characters who are boring,
who are not boring at all.
There's very little new here. I mean, it is the same kind of attacks done by largely the same dinosaurs, shot largely the same way. It's people up against cars hiding while like a big mouth comes out, and it's a little tedious. There isn't anything exciting. I mean, Adam, were you caught up in the action scenes?
I was caught up in the action to a small extent, but here's the ultimate litmus test for me on this, because I think you're right. There's not a whole lot new. It is Jurassic Park 1 replayed to almost a fine T. The real telltale, though, is the fact that in the theater we were all sitting in, the folks who'd come in to see it and were waiting through the credits, hoping there would be an extra scene at the end. And collectively, when that last credit rolls and then the PG-13 or whatever appears up on the screen, collectively, the entire crowd that was still there all went,
That has nothing to do with the movie. That has everything to do with them wanting something at the end, which is stupid because none of the other ones had that.
No, Sarah, I'm actually defending you right now, so hold your punches.
All right.
Where I'm coming with this is they actually wanted more.
Yes.
They were thrilled enough to sit through the credits to actually make it to that and to actually sit there and go, oh, man.
It's because the movie sets up a sequel with about a half hour left, so they're like, where's...
You don't
character who doesn't die
you don't need that.
Going with stuff
it,
going.
Is it because the ride was over and they didn't get the thrill? Is that
no the audience the non-critical audience that was at this movie exploded during a certain scene.
Did your guest enjoy this movie?
My guest was not awed by the film, and that is
my guest
that is a little
was
bit
not
of an
awed
issue.
By the film so I mean it the, plenty of guests were not awed by the film. I mean, you have issues with it. You think it's too beholden to
It is too beholden to the first film, but it's staged really well. Colin Trevorrow shows that Safety Not Guaranteed was not a fluke by any stretch of the imagination. The geography of the film is perfect. The physics of the film are great. There's never unlike, say, a Fast and Furious film where things are Looney Tunes, you actually can believe what is taking place inside the confines of this motion picture.
It's staged,
which I think gives it far more suspense and far more tension than something that is just crazy cartoon
world. The staging is the same staging as the first film. If it's done well, it's because it's a retread.
It's not, though. He still manages to make it.
No,
the movie pays delicate homage to the first film, but it's still its own beast.
Can I give Chris Pratt a little rap for his bizarre role as trainer of raptors, which is obnoxiously silly but works very well and has maybe the best set piece, which is the first one, which is probably the lowest key level one, which is just him trying to save one person in a cage.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I think his part, by and large, rounded out nice. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Let's bring this column to the barn, though. So, Sarah, where do you sit on it?
It's a theater. It's a theater if you can see it in the biggest, loudest, best venue available. If you can go see this in real IMAX, not that silly FOMAX stuff that the majority of the multiplexes have, but real IMAX,
a
if you can see it that way,
screen.
You need to see it that way. Sound. If you're in Seattle and you can go see this at the Cinerama, go see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It
That's
will
not.
IMAX. I know, but it's still an amazing screen with amazing sound. The Pacific Science Center IMAX is the place to go.
And then you'd have to go down to Portland to be the next one.
That is true.
Brian, how about you?
Skip. Hold on to your bucks.
What?
What about for kids? Is it good to take your kids?
Did the kids like the first one?
They like stuff. Who cares?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay. Carl, did you get a chance to screen this with us?
No.
Okay. And Beth, I'm going to assume that you... Okay. So, yeah.
I would assume they were SIF decompressing yesterday.
Yes, I can
if
believe
Beth
that.
Had been watching that, she'd be in trouble.
Adam, are you skipping? Skip Rent Theater.
I'm actually going to say theater on it because I do think it is. I think it's a return to the Jurassic lore. I thought it was fun. I didn't see a lot new. I'm going to disagree on the character development, but I still had fun with it. There it is. Ta-da! That being said, the Seattle International Film Festival, Carl, Beth, tell us a little bit about what you guys are if we're not familiar with what has just happened here in Seattle.
It's our 41st year. We present films over 25 days from 92 countries, 268-plus feature films, 160-plus short films. It's all over Seattle, plus Renton, Kirkland, and Bellevue, and filmmakers come from around the world, and we show films to over 150,000 people. So biggest audience in the United States, most films in the United States. It's a big deal.
Wow.
So, and you were getting mad at us for being 12 years old? Aren't you like senior citizens at 41?
More than senior citizens.
Yes. And there's, you know, if you're counting, it's 41 to you, but you know.
In dog years.
Started in 1976. Yeah.
We're like, an actress trying to get her age, which changed on IMDb.
Wait, if you started in 76, you'd only be 39.
Your first annual.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So there's already one. Yeah. And we didn't have a 13th.
Well, we had a 13th, but we had a 13th. We called a 14th. That's the Easter egg for all you. We just spoiled it. There was no unlucky 13, so our 13th was a 14th.
12th,
so this year was really our 40th. We celebrated our 40th twice.
Yeah, so most... Wow. You didn't know that?
And now everyone's really confused. They're like, what is this? And who are these people? And we are a nonprofit arts organization. There was a ranking in the Puget Sound Business Journal of all the top arts organizations, and they forgot us because they think film is not art, which is a big issue with me.
Yep.
Film is art.
And
with over 7,000 members of the organization, which is huge.
And...
Well, and SIF has done a glorious job of saving cinema in Seattle. I mean, you reopened the Uptown. You reopened the Egyptian.
Yes.
You kept the Harvard exit open for one last amazing hurrah.
Who knows? Maybe there's something that will happen, but I don't think so for the Harvard. And, you know,
that's
Uptown, so we own it. So now someone can't buy it and take it away and tear it down.
I mean, we can get some new seats.
Yeah, they could turn it into condos.
Yes.
Like every other building in Seattle.
They could be okay if it's condos as long as the movie theater's in the bottom and there's a rooftop deck with outdoor movies.
Maybe, okay. So tell us, guys, what are you going to do now?
Garden.
Well.
We can pull the weeds, trim the roses.
No, we open again. We open already at the Egyptian.
Well.
Tomorrow night.
Well, what's
opening? Thursday. We're opening.
Which is tomorrow night.
That's tomorrow? Oh, God.
Yeah.
St. Laurent. And also from last year, the 100-year-old man who disappeared and climbed out the window.
At the Uptown.
And don't we have Best of SIF this weekend,
Where
we get
SIF.
To we get to talk about some of the films
some
that people love.
Audience winners, jury winners. Yeah, we've actually got the audience winner for both best film and best documentary.
And what are
best film is The Dark Horse, a great New Zealand drama.
And what do they win if they win best film?
They won a wonderful piece from Piper O'Neill, a wonderful sculptural piece.
The artist rendition of the Space Needle.
And it's called?
The Golden Space Needle.
The Golden Space Needle.
Gorgeous. No cash. No cash, just all the glory.
Exactly.
And you know who else has one?
Audience loves.
Lots of people have them.
That's true.
Usually their first, sometimes their first award before they get their Academy
Richard
Award.
Linklater has one.
He does.
Yeah. So what else won some? What else won the awards that are going to be shown?
The Best Documentary Audience Award was Romeo is Bleeding, which is a terrific documentary about San Francisco set play rendition of Romeo and Juliet.
So good.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So awesome. Don't miss that. We're also showing the Jury Award winner for documentary, which is The Great Alone, which is Lance Mackey, who comes from an Iditarod racing family, and his struggles with cancer and coming back and re-winning. I mean, it's just...
It's heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking and amazing, and the scenery. I mean, Alaska. Just Alaska in the winter and the Iditarod, and it's powerful.
Very excited that one, because it was world premiere, and audiences loved it. It's not just because they brought the dog.
Exactly. Although he did bring his dog.
Aww.
Yes.
So, Carl, Beth, some of the folks that were there, we had a lot of guests also mm-hmm. that streamed their way through. Who did you have the most fun with?
Well, Paul Feig, Kevin Bacon, and Jason Schwartzman for me. And then the two directors, Patrick Bryce for The Overnight, as well as the most funny, dry person ever, Bob Byington for Seven Chinese Brothers. Sometimes you think he's being an asshole, but he's just being funny. Hmm. I love him.
I heard Jermaine Clement.
I'm not supposed to say that word, am I?
No, that's all right.
Oops. I heard Jermaine Clement was a treasure to hang around with.
He was great, too.
Absolutely.
He wandered folk life and was very amused by what was going on there. And then he went to the Mecca Cafe and just talked to random people at the bar.
My favorite people were Cliff Curtis, just an extraordinary New Zealand actor who was here for The Dark Horse, and Tig Notaro. Actually, I had two funny storytellers. Tig Notaro with her documentary Tig, which is about her. And then Stephen Tobolowsky was here as well with The Primary Instinct. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Now, I know you two are already super busy. Do you ever talk with some of the directors who have stuff, maybe particularly distribution problems? And have you ever talked about maybe setting up online SIFF throughout the year as a way for people to stream stuff or anything like that? Is that something that's rattling around your year-round brains?
We're always looking how we can expand the opportunities for filmmakers. That's what the festival was founded, was to really provide a platform for filmmakers to launch their films into North America and to get audiences. So it is, as distribution has changed, we need to figure out how that makes sense. Part of it's having theaters and being year-round exhibitors. Getting into distribution is a whole another business.
It's a whole another can of worms.
Which is interesting, but we haven't got into that. We've really stayed on the exhibition side, but there are things we are doing with shorts and
testing. On Alaska Airlines, actually.
Yeah, we have
an Alaska Airlines channel, short films, SIFF Selects. So when you're flying on Alaska, you can go and choose some of the short films that we've played in the festival in the past. It's an awesome way for films maybe 4 or 5 years old to get a new audience and to really.
Well, and speaking of short films, I mean, is this the third or the fourth year that SIFF is an Oscar qualifying festival?
It's actually the seventh.
Seventh. Oh my goodness. Wow. Okay, yeah. I lost track a long time ago. That's amazing to me that we get to see these short films here, and then they can
go on.
They could go on and qualify, we've had winners come out of here.
Last year's winner didn't qualify with SIFF, but was one of our audience favorites, The Phone Call.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And then we also bring a lot of film industry in, so we bring a lot of film distributors in, buyers. We brought a lot of buyers in, and also some press. We love our Seattle press. We brought press from Variety and Hollywood Reporter and all those kind of things to do reviews and to get out there for the industry. There's a great film, Me, Him, Her. I actually like Max Landis. He's sort of crazy, but brilliant but in a funny way. And Beth and I watched this movie by ourselves. No other one. And we were laughing. So we decided to show that film.
We knew that there was something special if it could make the two of us.
And it has Luke Bracey in it, who you'll see later in December in Point Break.
Yes.
But he's completely different in this movie. This movie's about millennials sort of trying to figure their way in a celebrity-obsessed world of the fantastic world of Los Angeles. And it's very current, and it's also crazy, and there's a sword fight in it that's a very long one that sort of makes no sense but also fits perfectly in the film.
So I got to ask, because the last time you were here, Carl, you let it slip that you still had your bootleg VHS of Mark Christopher's 54. Did you return that to him?
No, he didn't ask me for it to use in the film, but he said I can keep it. But that was a really great night because we not only showed the director's cut, but we also turned the Neptune Theater, which is another former movie theater that is now a live music show, into Studio 54 for a night with a big disco ball, video disco tunes, and we had the Studio 54 dancers. And we had Jennifer Beals once on the stage and did Flashdance, believe it or not.
Lovely.
Or at least it looked like Jennifer Beals.
Have you started receiving submissions already for next year?
We have. They're just on hold, but we officially on August 1st.
Okay.
What do you say to people that come back at you and say, oh my gosh, it's just too long. It's too much. It's too ungainly. There's just too much.
Well, most people only see 2 to 4 films. So it's just, you know, it's all you film fanatics out there that are burning yourselves out.
Nerds. All of you nerds.
But every day, you know, regular people, unlike us, they go see. So actually, it's great because we reach a really diverse audience and people, we have to work hard to find those people for all the specific films that might appeal to, you know, each and every one. But that's what we do. So we get really interesting audiences for across the spectrum. And we actually, as an arts organization, our demographics mirror King County more than any other art organization because we reach so many different people. So
can I bribe you to go higher into Snohomish? I live up north.
We went to Everett, but, you know,
that's close enough. I'm almost Everett. I'm a little past that.
We're not in Everett now, though, but maybe.
You never know.
So what's going to keep you guys on your toes as you kind of move forward into this next year? I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but besides gardening and
more films?
More films.
I mean, we start traveling in September. We also have some mini festivals coming up.
We do. Women in Cinema is in September, September 17th to 20th.
Yes.
And then French Cinema Now is in October. It's all French language films. And then Cinema
Italian
Style.
Are there subtitles again?
Hmm?
Are there subtitles?
There's a lot of subtitles.
Some.
And then Cinema Italian Style is in November.
Sometimes there's an English language film in French Cinema Now, but I'm not sure why. Just kidding.
No.
Maybe a French movie that's in English?
No.
Just kidding. But actually... The other thing is that I will be spending a lot of time outdoors in July and August, and then I'll be going back in the movies in September.
Exactly.
Decompress. Enjoy the outside while the outside is nice.
But I'm still seeing movies. I went and saw Dope today, which we are opening later on June 19th, and that's an amazing film. It was in the festival. I hadn't actually gotten to see it yet, but it's one that we look forward to. So we are seeing movies for cinema as well as for festival.
Okay, so let's recap. Best film, best audience awards, all of the above. It's the best of, that's the weekend, right?
Yes, this coming weekend, starting on Friday, best of SIFF.
So what do we have to watch out for?
The Dark Horse.
The Dark Horse.
Cliff Curtis. The Great Alone. Mackey and his amazing Iditarod racing.
Vincent, amazing French film that people absolutely
French
loved.
Superhero.
He's not really, it's sort of a French superhero. He's not a superhero, but he's sort of an anti-hero. And Behavior, Messy. Paper Planes, The Great Alone, Romeo's Bleeding. Good Old Boy, I love Good Old Boy. That was about the 10-year-old from India in the 70s. This family comes to good old America, USA, and he just wants to be like other kid and watch Star Wars and, you know, be with the girl next door. And it's a great fish out of water cultural thing in the 70s.
It's very sweet.
Loved
appropriate
it.
For the whole family.
Yeah, and families absolutely loved it. And the boy was great. He would he'd go around and say, what was the phrase he said? Good day. Said,
how doing?
How doing? How you doing?
How doing?
His dad told him to say hello to everyone. And when he was riding his bike, he said, how doing? How doing? Anyways, he did it better. The kid was hilarious. He's a stand-up comic in the making. The 10-year-old actor.
He is actually literally a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
Anything more?
Chatty Cathy's. There's a cat movie. If you like cats.
I was going to say, our friends, our best friends of the podcast, Chatty Cathy's. Isn't that showing again?
It is showing again.
It won the New American Cinema Award.
What?
The Federation of International Critics liked it.
I know. I'm on my own. For some reason, I ended up on my own Cinema Squabble Island with Chatty Cathy's.
You were positive,
but I really liked it.
I thought it was really funny.
I got a kick out of it.
My own cats.
And I started worrying about what my cats were going to say, though.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Absolutely impressive. So, okay, so to recap what we've seen and what we've talked about this evening, Spy, let's talk a little bit about that again. We've got 5 solid, see it in the theaters from everybody in the room right now.
We need a nickname for that.
Send in your nickname ideas.
Yes, please.
Yeah. What would you call it, Carl?
That's like a casino jackpot winner.
Seriously.
Of some sort. Yeah. You get lots of coins.
So Spy, getting 5 solid, see it in the theaters from the Squabblers, talking about Love and Mercy. One rental, three theater, and no skips on that. Also, Insidious. Sarah, where did we sit on that? I didn't actually even write that down.
Two strong rentals.
Two rentals. Yeah, so it goes. Jurassic World, splitting the difference. Got two theaters, one skip.
You went soft.
I did.
You're the standard.
I'm being the contrarian.
And maybe one take the ride at Universal Studios.
Ooh.
Just kidding. That was a joke.
It used to be a good ride, though.
It could be a ride.
I know. Yeah. It was a ride.
It will be a ride.
Again. They'll call it, of course, not Jurassic Park anymore. It's Jurassic World. Now at Universal Studios.
So before Adam wraps us up, did you guys have anything else you would like to add tonight, Beth and Carl?
That was a nice
thousand-yard
stare.
Well, I don't know. What did we miss? There's so many. The only thing I'll say is the Seattle International Film Festival is 25 days, but we actually have three locations, five screens, and it's a festival every day. We're only dark for 3 days, and that's now. So we'll be open for the
tomorrow.
Next year. Starting tomorrow.
Fantastic. Sarah, you working on anything right now?
You know what? I actually, going back to SIFF just one more time, I have a SIFF recap that's going to be appearing in the Seattle Gay News tomorrow, and it's going to be a little bit different. I'm chatting with John Portanova, friend of the show and local director of Valley of the Sasquatch, and he's going to talk about his SIFF experience as a local filmmaker making his debut at the festival.
Fantastic. How about you, Brian?
The long-discussed contrarian article finally went up. I think it proved me to be not that angry at everything.
Just today?
It went, it's up. You can read it. You can see if I'm the hater of haters.
I do have to add one other thing.
Uh-huh.
Our much-talked-about MovieFreak.com reboot has actually happened. So please go to MovieFreak.com and take a look at the reboot. Take a look at the reboot and comment. Let us know what you think.
Is that a reboot or repoop?
This is not Spy 2.
No, not at all by a long.
Gotta say that again. Sorry.
Best vomit joke I've seen in a movie in years.
Okay.
Dope has the best vomit joke.
Better than the Spy vomit joke?
It's a sex vomit
don't
joke.
The guy.
Sex or sex?
Sex.
Okay.
How that went all... How we pull that one together, I'm not entirely sure. But that being said, thank you so much for taking a listen here on Cinema Squabble. If you get the chance, swing on by good old iTunes. Give us a vote. Vote yes. Thumbs up. 5 stars. Whatever it takes. I'm not quite sure how the whole voting system works on iTunes.
But you should really look that up, Adam, if you're going to talk about it.
Well, but I know it's a star system. I'm just kind of saying. But if you get the chance, give us the stars. Give us the likes. We sure appreciate it very much. So thanks to Sprint Arbogast, our producer this evening. And thanks to Squawking Vulture Studios, who's doing post-production on this production. Thank you, Carl Spence and Beth Barrett, for joining us from Seattle International Film Festival, doing the recap with us one more time.
Yay!
And
Yay! It's great to be here.
Thanks.
And thank you so much for listening.
Roar.